who will later fight against me, and who will be killed and thrown into a well at the place called Badr. And there are certain other persons, Abu Sufyan, his son Muawiyah, and Ikrimah, son of Abu Jahl, who will instigate clans of Arabs against me to come out for a battle, the Khandaq or Ahzab. These were the great prophecies of the Holy Prophet, which came out true word by word. And then the Holy Prophet ordered the tree to come near him, saying, O tree, if you have faith in Allah and the Day of Judgment, and if you believe that I am a prophet of Allah, then by the grace and order of Allah, be uprooted and come and stand near me. I swear by Allah that no sooner had the words come out of his mouth than the tree uprooted and started moving towards the Holy Prophet. The rustling of its leaves sounded like the flutter of the wings of birds. It came near him, and taking root, stood there. Some of its tall branches were throwing shadows over him, and some others were touching my shoulder. I was standing to his right. When the Quraysh saw this wonderful spectacle, their enmity and antagonism increased. They arrogantly said that they wanted him to order the tree to be divided in two parts, and one half of it to stand where it was, and the other half to go still nearer to him. The Prophet for the second time ordered the tree to do as they had desired. The compliance of the second order of the Holy Prophet was more wonderful than the first. With a loud report, the tree divided itself into two parts. One half of it was again uprooted and came near to him still. It came so near that it could have embraced the Messenger of Allah. Even this sight did not make them see the light of truth. They still were arrogant, wanted him to send that half back with orders to join the other half and be one tree as before. And thus the Prophet of Allah ordered, and the tree obeyed implicitly and became one tree as before. That was a sight which would have impressed every sane person. It impressed me, and I said, there is no God but Allah the Almighty. O Prophet of Allah, I was the first to testify you, and I am the first to declare that this tree has testified your prophethood and has accepted the greatness and glory of your command by implicitly obeying it. What we saw just now was actually a fact and not an illusion. Hearing me, they all unanimously cried out, no, no, no. He is a first-class magician and a liar. His magic is wonderful. He is an expert in it. And what he has shown can be testified to only by a person of his caliber. By this, they meant me. I did not mind that reference and satire, because I belong to a group which does not care for any censor in the cause of Allah. This is such a group that the faces of those who belong to it clearly indicate their sincerity, truthfulness, and honesty. Their talk is the pattern of the talk of the pious and virtuous people. Their nights are spent in worshipping Allah, and their days in acting as guides to seekers of truth. They faithfully follow the Holy Quran. They revive the religion revealed by Allah, and relate the traditions of the Holy Prophet. They are neither proud nor vain, neither ambitious nor dishonest, neither envious nor malicious, and neither they create dissension nor sophism. Their minds are filled with the love of paradise, and their bodies are busy in work to attain it.
Sermon 198. This sermon is one of Imam Ali's famous discourses about attributes of piety. It explains the qualities of pious and Allah-fearing persons. Most of Imam's sermons deal with this subject, but this one has two peculiarities. First, Imam Ali has explained what piety really means and what manners of men pious people are, describing graphic details of their ways of living, thinking, praying, and dealing with other men. Second, a very sad story is attached to this sermon. It was about Hammam, who was one of the companions of Imam Ali, a very pious and Allah-fearing man. He once asked Imam Ali to explain at length the qualities of pious persons. He wanted the explanation to be so graphic and so vivid that he could visualize a pious man. Imam Ali knew that Hammam had a very tender heart and was disinclined to explain piety in the way that Hammam had requested. And evading the subject, he replied, "Hammam, fear Allah and do good deeds. Remember that Allah is always a companion of pious and good people." But Hammam was not satisfied with this reply and wanted Imam Ali to speak in detail. He pressed so much, and so many joined him and seconded his request, that Imam Ali reluctantly delivered the following sermon. And as Imam Ali was fearing, the effect of this sermon proved fatal for Hammam, and before it was concluded, he expired. When Allah created mankind, he was not in need of their obedience and prayers, neither was he nervous of their disobedience, because disobedience or insubordination of men cannot harm him. Similarly, obedience of obedient people cannot do him any good. He is beyond the reach of harm and benefit. After creating man, he destined for him the variety of food which his body could absorb and assimilate, and the places which were congenial for him to live in and to propagate his message. Among these human beings, excellent are those who are pious and who fear Allah. They possess preeminence and excellence because they always speak truthfully, righteously, and to the point. Their way of living is based upon moderation, and their mode of dealing with other men is found on goodwill, fellow feeling, and kindness towards them. They refuse to themselves the things prohibited by Allah. They concentrate upon knowledge of things which will bring them eternal bliss. They bear hardships and sufferings as happily as they enjoy comforts and pleasures. If Allah had not fixed the span of life for each one of them, their souls, in desire of attaining His paradise and out of fear of falling into His displeasure, would not have stayed in their bodies for long. They have visualized mentally the glory of Allah in such a way that beyond Him nothing in this world frightens or overawes them. Everything other than His might appears to them as insignificant and humble. They believe in paradise and its blessings like a person who has been there and has actually seen everything of paradise with his own eyes. Similarly, their faith in hell and its torments is as strong as that of a person who had passed through its sufferings. They feel the tortures of hell are around them and very near to them. The ways of worldly-minded people make them sorry. They harm nobody. Excessive eating and pleasure-seeking does not fatten them. Their wants are limited. Their wishes are few. They have accepted patiently sufferings and adversities in this mortal and transitory life for the sake of eternal bliss, which, by the grace of Allah, proved for them a very profitable transaction. The vicious world desired their fellowship, but they turned their faces away from it. It wanted to snare them, but they willingly accepted every trouble to free themselves from its clutches. They pass their nights reciting carefully the Holy Quran and try to secure guidance from this holy book for the purification of their minds. Whenever they come across a passage describing the paradise, they feel highly attracted towards it and develop such a keen desire to reach it that they visualize paradise with all its blessings, while a passage about hell frightens them and makes them feel as if they are seeing and hearing the raging fire and the groans and lamentations of those who are suffering the tortures of hell. They pass their nights offering prayers and imploring and beseeching Allah to save them from hell. Days found them occupied with such acts as clearly indicate their wisdom, depth of knowledge, virtuousness and piety. Constant fasting, simple diet, avoidance of every aspect of luxury and regular hard work make them look lean and haggard, but they possess very sound and robust health. When people hear them discussing various problems of life, they often take them to be whimsical, fanatic, or even half-witted. But it is not so. They look confused and unhappy because they are not satisfied with the quality and quantity of the work done by them in the cause of religion and humanity. The more they work, the less they feel satisfied. Having set up a very high standard of efficiency for their work, they feel nervous that indolence may not make it impossible for them to attain those heights. If someone of them is praised for piety, virtuousness, and the good deeds done by him, he does not like to be so complimented. He is afraid lest such praise should allure him towards vanity, self-praise, and self-glorification. He says, "I know my mind and my work more than others, and Allah knows much more than others, and Allah knows much more than I. O Lord, please do not hold me responsible for what they have said about me. You know very well that I did not like them to make such praises. Please, Lord, grant me excellence far greater than what they complimented me on." And Lord, please pardon those of my sins and shortcomings which they do not know. You will find very pious person possessing the following attributes. He is firm in his faith. He is resolute, though tender-hearted and kind. He is unwavering in his convictions and beliefs. He is greedy of knowledge. He forgives those who harmed him, fully knowing that they have wronged him. Even when he owns wealth, his ways of life are based upon moderation. His prayers are models of humility and submissiveness to Allah. Even when he is starving, he maintains his self-respect. He bears sufferings patiently. He will resort only to honest means of living. Leading others towards truth and justice will give him pleasure. He disdains avarice and greed. Though he does good deeds all the time, yet he feels nervous about his shortcomings. Every night he thanks Allah for having passed one more day under his grace and mercy. Every morning finds him starting the day with invocations. Of nights, he is cautious that he may not carelessly waste those hours in comfort and ease. He starts his days being happy with the thought that Allah has given him another day to do his duty. If his mind wishes for something unholy and impious, he refuses to obey its dictates. His desire is to achieve eternal bliss. Worldly pleasures do not interest him. His wisdom is associated with patience. His deeds reciprocate his words. He does what he says. Inordinate desires do not trouble him. He has few defects in him. He is courteous to others. He possesses a contented mind. He eats very little. He does not harm anybody. He is easy to be pleased. He is strong in his faith. His passions are dead. His temper is under control. People expect good out of him and consider themselves immune from his harm. Even if he is found among those who forget Allah, his name will be written in the list of pious persons. If he is in company of those who always remember Allah, his name will not be included amongst those who forget him. He forgives those who harm him. He helps those who have forsaken him and have refused to help him. He is kind to those who have been cruel to him. He does good to those who do evil to him. He never indulges in loose talk. He has no vice in him, and his good qualities are very outstanding and remarkable. While facing dangers and disasters, he is calm and undisturbed. In sufferings and calamities, he is patient and hopeful. In prosperity, he is thankful to Allah. He would not harm his worst enemy. He will never commit a sin, even for the sake of his best friend. He admits truth before evidence is brought against him. He never misappropriates anything entrusted to him. He never forgets what has been told to him. He does not slander anybody. He does not harm his neighbors. When misfortunes befall some person, he does not blame him. Nor is he happy at the losses of others. He neither goes astray from the right path, nor does he follow a wrong one. His silence does not indicate his moroseness, nor are his laughters loud and boisterous. He bears persecution patiently, and Allah punishes his oppressor. He is hard to himself and very lenient to others. He bears hardships in this belief to attain eternal bliss and peace. He never wrongs a fellow being. If he avoids somebody, it is to retain his piety and purification. If he forms contact with somebody, it is on account of his kindness and clemency. He does not avoid anybody because of his pride and vanity, and he does not associate with others with ulterior motives of hypocrisy, pretense, and villainous. The narrator of this sermon says that Hammam was hearing the sermon very attentively when Imam Ali reached the above passage. He passed into a deep swoon and expired. Seeing this, Imam Ali said, "By Allah, I was hesitating to explain all this to Hammam because of this very reason. Effective advice on minds ready to receive them often brings almost similar result." Abdullah bin Kawwa, who later turned to be a Kharijite and a bitter enemy of Imam Ali, on hearing Imam's remarks said, "Why did this knowledge not act upon you in the way it did on Hammam?" Imam Ali replied, "Verily, death is inevitable and unavoidable, but for each person a time of death is fixed. No one can avoid it, and there is always an apparent cause for it. Do you know that it was Satan who made you ask such a question? Try not to accept its insinuations in future." Sermon 199. This sermon deals with hypocrisy and the ways of hypocrites. In it, Imam Ali explains in detail the ways of those who do not sincerely accept Islam. "All praise be to Allah, who enabled me to obey Him and to refrain from sins. I beseech Him to favor me with His blessings and to keep me firm on His path. I testify that Muhammad, peace of Allah be upon him and his descendants, is His servant and His prophet, that he endured every kind of hardship and suffering to gain His blessings, and that he suppressed his anger and excitements to achieve His pleasure. Those who were near him kept changing their minds and opinions about him, and those who were not near him united together to oppose him. Arabs also rose against him, and from far and near assembled to fight with him and to create every kind of trouble and frustration for him. O creatures of Allah, I advise you to fear Allah, and I warn you against the hypocrites. They themselves are misguided, and they will misguide you. They are lost in the labyrinth of sins and vices, and will make you lose your straight path in that tortuous maze. They change their colors to suit their surroundings, and their words always have double meanings. To convert you to their views and to win your sympathies, they will resort to every sort of fraud and pretense, will adopt varieties of artifices and pretexts, and will apply all possible allurements and deceptions. They always lie in ambush to seduce you. They pretend to be sincere and honest, but their hearts are full of hypocrisy and villainous. Their movements are very subtle to mislead you. They work so artfully and cunningly that you cannot easily find out their purpose. They poison your minds without your knowing it, like a disease spreading inside your body without your realizing it. They behave as if they are treating your ailments. They talk as if they really feel for your troubles, but the result of their activities and their persuasions will affect you like an incurable disease. Happiness and prosperity of others make them jealous and unhappy. They will do their worst to drag others into difficulties, reverses, and troubles. They will exert themselves to convert hopes of others into disappointments and despairs. They have their victims in every walk of life. They know how to touch your heart and how to gain your ears. For your every sorrow, they have crocodile's tears to shed, and for every pain, they offer you a balm, ineffective or injurious. If they praise you, it is with the hope of getting louder praises out of you. If they want to get something out of you, they will pester you with their demands. If they wish to slander somebody, they will expose him threadbare. If they pass verdicts, they always forsake equity and justice. They are opportunists and time servers, possessing great adaptability. For every occasion, they have got a ruse to adopt and a villainous to make use of. They can tell an apparently convincing lie against every truth, can lead you towards a crooked way in opposition to every straight path, and they may often advise you to prefer a vile murder to an honest and respectable person. They pretend to possess light for every gloom of your life, and they try to raise false hopes in place of true disappointments, so that they may gain your confidence and may convince you of their sincerity. They know how to paint a lie to resemble truth, and how to give a color to a foul action to make it look like a good deed. They are vile enough to make wickedness and vice easy for themselves, and they try to raise difficulties for others in the path of religion and truth. They are devil's minions, deserving help. Allah has said about them, "They are Satan's party, and the party of Satan will certainly suffer great loss." Surah Mujadilah 57:19.